We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is Darius Miller.
This is Drew Hardy.
This is Lance Thomas, Tyree Gavin.
Jason Smith.
Anthony Davis of the New Orleans Pelicans.
You're listening to.
And you are listening to In the Know.
In the Know.
The Bourbon Street Shots.
Bourbon Street Shots podcast.
All Pelicans, all the time.
Welcome to the show. The Pelicans just beat the Atlanta Hawks and completely destroyed my prediction for the week. I wanted them to lose so bad. Michael, why couldn't they lose to the Hawks?
They met us halfway. You predicted 1-2, I believe, and nailed the first two. I was optimistic and went 3-0, and I was wrong because, obviously, of these three games, it was the Denver one at home that they're going to lose. I mean, we just...
Right, and lose kind of just... dumbly, like the whole game was just frustrating. But yeah, Atlanta, the streak is gone. I particularly enjoyed the little gag on our site with the 19 W's and the Hawks name. But yeah, are they now the Hawks with an L?
Yeah, or the Hex. it was a good game, and it wasn't, you know, we've seen teams sometimes when they're on a winning streak, you know, they just get overburdened by it. They don't play well. They're tired, whatever. I thought the Hawks, I mean, they played fine. They had stretches where, you know, Korver was just hitting some shots that were unbelievable. And, you know, Damari Carroll was playing that up-in-your-face press defense on Tyreek and was giving him a hard time in the minutes he was in. I mean, the Hawks did not lose this game. The Pelicans came out determined, fired up. AD seemed to be yelling on every play, whether he was in the game or on the bench rooting for guys. I mean, they came out and just absolutely beat down the hottest team and the number one team in the NBA. You know, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And I don't even think they played a great game. You look at the bench. The bench went, 4 of 15 from 3? You know, the Pelicans missed a lot of open shots themselves. I think they played well, killed a good team, and they could get even better. I mean, Drew's not even playing in this game.
All right. Yeah, I mean, my first initial take when I was looking at the numbers is I was like, oh, well, it felt like the Pelicans had it clicking offensively, just mostly. Except for a few stretches where there's a lot of bench guys in, it felt like the Pelicans were hitting all their shots that they were getting, and they were rolling along pretty well. So I had like an idea in my head that, you know, the Pelicans had just, you know, hit their shots, the Hawks hit their normal shots, but we were a better offensive team on the night. But the Hawks were not actually, I mean, their numbers are well below what they normally do on that number of possessions. They're one of the better offensive teams in the league, and they were under 100 points per 100 possessions, which is pretty poor. So the Pelicans not only did everything they needed to do offensively, but they did everything they needed to do defensively. And it was a fun game to watch. Are you confident in this Pelicans team? Or when, like, I started the fourth quarter and I saw the lineup that Monty put in there to start the fourth quarter, I'm like, all it's going to take is three threes, and this game is right back. It's back and forth and in question again. And were you worried that that was going to happen, or are you starting to feel some confidence that the Pelicans, they got this?
I mean, if they're at home, I'm not very worried. I truly believe that, save for maybe Golden State, any team that comes into New Orleans should be the underdog. I don't think that, you know, any team is better, or if we played 100 times would win more than 50 against New Orleans at New Orleans. It's when they go on the road. I mean, people are starting to ask, is this team turning it around? These are a bunch of home wins, and that's nice and all, but you only get 41 home games, and I believe they only have 19 left. Like, they need to start closing out some games on the road before I have 100% confidence in them. But at home, when Anthony Davis is fired up like this, when Cunningham and Pondexter are going all out on both sides of the court, and Eric Gordon, I mean, Eric Gordon is catch and shoot three is, you know, almost Korver-esque at this point. I mean, it's ridiculous. I expect it to go in every time. So, yeah, when they're playing like this and they're at home, I don't tend to worry that much. Unless we're playing a team on a massive losing streak, then I'm terrified.
Yeah, I mean, I'll even say this, like, Eric Gordon, I was firmly in the camp that this is not going to be a guy who would ever pass the ball on anything but a dump off in the paint. I had kind of gotten away from the idea that he could be a drive and kick or even a pick and roll feeder player. And this stretch of games, he's been doing that really well. He finds guys rolling. He finds guys on the edges. He got seven assists this game, and against the Clippers, I think he had a few more. He had seven against the Clippers and against the Denver Nuggets. Let's see what he had. He had six. I mean, is Eric Gordon a point guard? All right, let's not get stupid.
I mean, basically what he's been doing since he come, I mean, his numbers are very comparable to somebody like Eric Bledsoe since he came back from injury. I mean, he is definitely taken off. I mean, I'm cautious to get optimistic, not because I think he's going to slump again, but just because I'm always worried about the injury around the corner, and I don't want to put too much pressure or depend too much on him. But, I mean, he's been fantastic. And, yeah, the stretch of games has felt really good, except for that Denver game. The Denver game, I don't really know how else to chalk it up. I mean, if you look at the two games that they played after us, they shot something ridiculous, like 10 or 11% from three. And that game against us, contested three-pointers at that. I mean, Aflalo had hands in his face and was just draining them. They were hitting them, and we couldn't hit the broadside of a barn, yet, you know, we're still in that game late. But sometimes it just comes down to making shots or not. And that game, you know, it sucks that the Pels lost, but if I had to go 2-1 this week, I would have taken that one, because breaking this streak was, you know, felt awesome, and beating Chris Paul always feels good.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're talking about the home court advantage that this team has, and you realize that there are only three teams in the league who have a better home record than the Pelicans right now. Atlanta, who we just beat, Golden State, who you mentioned, and then Portland.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fantastic team at home. I mean, that's what makes it so frustrating when you think of some of the road games that they lost. But they're a young team that's not unexpected. We've chronicled how terrible Ryan Anderson has been on the road. And, you know, a lot of those road games.
Dreading a road trip.
Yeah, a lot of those road games came during heavy, you know, injury parts. Obviously, the New York and Philly losses. We didn't have AD and Drew. We didn't have Eric Gordon for that long stretch of time, a lot of which were road games. But I don't know. I mean, I really am trying to be optimistic and hope that this team is turning this corner and carry over on the road. And you got to just say this week in general is probably the biggest week for this franchise since AD came aboard. I mean, that
you mean the upcoming week or the week you just
well,
had?
Well, I mean, today is Monday. So
right.
If you consider Atlanta, you know, this week we'll have Atlanta, OKC twice and Chicago. If you could somehow find a way to go 4-0 or even 3-1 in that stretch, you know, you could really start getting serious about the playoffs. I mean, it looks like, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but it looks like Phoenix could go down tonight and to Memphis, and the Pels will just be one game back. And while I keep saying it's not playoffs or bust, I mean, I think that would be huge for this franchise, and this week I think might make or break those hopes.
Yep. I don't know if I'll go quite that far, but this is – at some point your team has to start clicking. And I can remember talking to Royce Young about the Oklahoma City Thunder, and he had just a moment where they clicked, where it was a game – he saw them pull out a tough win against a pretty good team, and they just started clicking from there. And the rest of that season, they played really well. And then it was next season where they, you know, finally broke 50 wins and were in the thick of things. But there was that like one game, and it was right around the end of January, beginning of February, and that team was just like, all right, maybe we got something here. And that's where things started getting interesting. So I'm kind of waiting to see that. And in some ways, I don't know. I don't want to say I just saw that against Atlanta, but this is a team that has these moments where they look like world beaters. Like David Wesley was saying it over and over in this game tonight, where they can beat any team in the league on any given night. And all they have to do is raise the floor. And I think they're okay. Like they get the floor off of where it is right now, where they can also lose to any team. So they can only lose to mediocre teams on most nights, and they're in good shape for the rest of the season.
Here's the one thing though that I would worry about is, you know, I do remember Royce saying that, but Oklahoma City was 100% healthy, you know, or at least had their core. Is there any fear that the Pelicans are hitting their stride with a major piece of their puzzle out and then having to reincorporate him and, you know, trying to figure out how to keep the momentum. I mean, I would be way more ecstatic right now if this team was hitting a stride with all of its core players working together. Is there any part of you that kind of worries about if this team is starting to peak now, having to incorporate another major piece and kind of shift roles?
Yes.
And rotation? Yeah.
Yes, I'm actually very worried about that. And I think you remember when I graded our guards, I gave Drew Holiday across all guards, I gave him a C, not even like among starters, just a C offensively. The part of what's so nice to watch this, I mean, it has almost coincided from Drew Holiday going down. This team has started passing the ball infinitely more freely. There's a whole lot less of the high pick and rolls unless Tyreke Evans has decided he's going to go hero ball. I mean, it's not a ton of the my turn, your turn, my turn, your turn. Oh, hey, there's Anthony Davis over there. Maybe we should try to throw the ball to him every once in a while. It's a lot more free-flowing. And so I got to worry, was Drew clumping things up, or not even, I can't even say that. I don't think Drew clumps it up. I just think, was there just too many guys who needed the ball on the floor? Because this team seems to click when it has guys who can just catch and shoot, or are going to pass the ball freely when they receive it.
Yeah, and this is the portion where some people are going to expect us to discuss moving Drew to the bench, but we already talked about that, and you know that's not going to happen. I guess my thing is, you know, when it comes down to the finishing five, are we guaranteed to see Drew, Tyreek, Eric Gordon, or with the way that Pondexter and Cunningham have been giving you so much energy and defense, you know, do you have to play one of them? And then if so, I mean, I think the starting lineup is still a no-brainer when Drew comes back and he's 100%. I'm more intrigued by how this Pelicans team is going to finish games because, you know, on some nights, Pondexter and Cunningham make it very hard for you to not have them on the floor at the end of games.
Right, because they're doing all the little stuff you need desperately, and they're not killing you with stupid decisions. So, or not killing you often with stupid decisions, because Pondexter still does some silly things sometimes.
So, I mean, obviously coming off to really good wins, but there was that frustrating Denver game. AD gets banged up. You know, there's a couple minutes there where we're all terrified. The team just, they couldn't put together a stretch of good basketball. Denver hit some, you know, very nice contested shots. The Pelicans couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. What was your major takeaways from that one?
Honestly, it felt like the Pelicans were pushing to catch Denver the entire game, and that they were, it just felt to me like they were right there all the time. And Denver would just hit a three to forestall it again and again. And when Davis went down, he came back and he was moving around all right, but he didn't have the same explosion. It just felt like it just was one of those nights. Like, I really didn't feel like, wow, like the Pelicans are being destroyed by this team. They don't have a chance. I just felt like all they need is like two stops in a row, and they're right back in this game, and this is a whole different feel. And every time they got to that two stops, they'd hit a three, or there would be one of those freak things where, you know, Fareed would clean up a shot and put it home, and or you know, Yusuf Nurkic would completely destroy whoever is guarding him. By the way, I'll remind you, Yusuf Nurkic was my boy in this draft.
Oh yeah, we both.
I wanted him big time.
Yeah, so. Yeah, but I mean, to be fair, that's another. I mean, Nurkic shooting, I think, coming into that game like 45% from the field.
You don't think he goes 7 of 9 every game?
Oh God, it's hitting those jumpers. Yeah, and this was the rare Ryan Anderson couldn't hit anything at home game, which,
yeah,
you know, with AD getting banged up there, really hurt. But yeah, I mean, this one just felt like a make or miss league type of game. I mean, it was something where Denver, you know, broke out of a slump, and then of course they went right back in it to the next couple of games. I mean, they just got destroyed by Memphis, I think 99-69 the following game. Couldn't hit anything, but
let's just be real. I mean, looking at the numbers, just flat out, Denver took 7 free throws the entire game. They were out rebounded disastrously. I mean, they had way more fouls. I mean, the Pelicans had a 13-point advantage from the free throw line. It's just the Pelicans missed their shots. That's and when Denver took theirs, they hit theirs. It's as simple as that. And I don't want to talk about Denver anymore because Denver sucks. I'm starting to hate Denver almost as much as I hate Portland. And it's just there's a genesis about in the game that will not be named, but it's just this team is even though they're not technically what I would consider a bad team, they're a not great team. Just they shouldn't be able to kick the crap out of the Pelicans. They've won twice this year over the Pelicans in big numbers.
Yeah, I mean, going into that game, I think there was a 3.9 point differential between the Pelicans and Denver. Like, yeah, you know, which really isn't much. I mean, people look at the record and think, oh, Denver, that's a team that we should beat easily. But, you know, point differential says there's about a 4-point difference between the two teams. One team makes a couple shots they don't normally make. The other team misses a couple they normally make. And, you know, right there, that's the swing that you need. So it's frustrating, but it happens to every team. I'm tired of people acting like the Pelicans are the only team that loses to bad teams. This Phoenix team that we're chasing, they have more losses to sub 500 teams than we do. So it's not like we're the only team that does it. It's just people listen to this podcast probably watch infinitely more Pelicans games than games of other teams, but it happens with everybody. Every team has bad coaching decisions. Every team, you know, messes up in key parts and loses to teams that their fan base, quote unquote, thinks they shouldn't lose to. So it's part of the game, but I'm just, you know, people seem to focus on that. This Pelicans team is also beating teams that come to play us and their fan base says, oh, this should be a win. So it's happening both ways. And to me, it's more exciting that we're beating these elite teams because we're not going to have to play the Denvers, the Phillies, and New York in the playoffs when we get there. And we look like, you know, we could stand tall with any of these possible playoff teams.
Let's talk Clippers because we're talking about playoff teams. So the funniest part I felt about this game was I watched it and I said, yeah, it would make sense that Austin Rivers would have one of his best games of the year against us. And then you look in the box score and he has 10 points on 8 shots, 1 assist, 1 rebound, and 3 fouls. And that's one of his best games of the year in my mind. Poor Austin Rivers. I feel for him. Do you feel for him?
It was good for him. He was getting a lot of his points were off of layups where basically he cut and he got fed a nice pass mm-hmm. by a big man and, you know, just had to turn around and lay it up. And he definitely wasn't getting that here. So, you know, if there's anywhere where he could not be terrible, it might be there. But yeah, not only those stats you talked about, but I think one of the biggest plays of the game was the, you know, the Clippers had just cut it to 9. Tyreek did something incredibly stupid at the end of the third quarter where he could have held for the last shot, but for some reason he attacked the basket with like 15 seconds left, gave the Clippers another possession. They go down and score. Pelicans get the ball back, and Austin Rivers for some reason fouls Jimmer on a 3-pointer at the end of the quarter, and all of a sudden you're going into the fourth quarter up by 12 instead of 9. I thought that was a play that, you know, Austin Rivers really helped us out. So, you know, I'll thank him for that, and I forgive all the missed layups and turnovers.
So we do have to talk about the star of this game, though, and that would be off the bench, Mr. Alexia Ginza. Well, I'm saying his name perfectly wrong just for your pleasure. 17 points, 9 rebounds, 3 blocks. He's mini Anthony Davis.
And I mean, we've talked about this before. This isn't an aberration. Ginza against the Clippers is, I mean, he's an all-star center.
He is.
If he plays the Clippers every, you know, every game, he would easily make the all-star team by a wide margin. It's a great matchup. Now, DeAndre Jordan made him look foolish a couple times on the other end, but when the Clippers went with, you know, Big Baby and Spencer Oz or whatever, Ginza was just absolutely eating their lunch. And God, speaking of Spencer Haught, do you remember everybody praising that addition this
yeah.
summer about how the Clippers made such a great signing by getting Haws for just the mid-level? And oh my God, is that not one of the worst signing so far? I mean,
so he put up really, really solid numbers on a really, really awful Philly team. And before that, he was pretty much garbage. And it's a contract year.
Yeah, I mean, it's to me, I've been saying this for years. People do the same thing when they want to surround Chris Paul. They just surround him with shooters. And you know, at the end of the day, all that's going to happen is they're going to be totally relying on him and they're going to fail every year. And I don't get it. I mean, I get it in a, you know, in a philosophy, in a vacuum type of way, but people have been building the wrong way about around Chris Paul since, you know, Jeff Bauer had his crack at it. And, I don't know. I don't get it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't really even know what people are thinking, because in this game, of course, Anthony Davis wasn't playing, and Jensen gets 24 minutes and plays really well. Spurs a article on our site by you about whether he should play or not more. And tonight against Atlanta, 0 minutes, a goose egg.
Which makes.
Do you think that's fair?
I mean, I don't think we should talk about tonight, because Atlanta is a very unique team. Their backup big man stretches out to the 3-point line, and you know.
So, do you think it's entirely matchup driven? Do you think he should just get his minutes because he should get his minutes?
I mean, let's wait till after this week, because I would be very surprised if he doesn't play against Oklahoma City and play a decent amount. But I think Atlanta's a totally different team that you can't really, you can't really talk about. But I'll be curious to see when it comes to OKC, because I think that's another good matchup for Ajinsa. But, I mean, I like I said in the article, where do you steal minutes from? I mean, when AD, Rhino, and Ashik are on the court, I mean, it was universal consensus before the season that everybody wanted those three guys to eat up all 96 minutes. So then where do you go get the minutes from? You play more three bigs, which we really haven't seen much since the beginning of the season.
And when we did see it, it wasn't good.
Right. I mean, do you steal minutes from Ashik or Ryan Anderson? I mean, maybe Ryan Anderson on the road. well, not only because he's been so bad on the road, but Ajinsa has been fantastic on the road. So, I mean, maybe there, but really, yeah, it's a good problem to have. We have too many big men, you know, who should be getting minutes, and it's hard to get it all for them. I think a lot of people would like to have that problem, and I'm glad that we have it.
Yeah, I mean, because even if you like look at tonight's minute spreads, Anthony Davis 34 minutes, Ashik 33, Ryan Anderson 28. That really left almost nothing for anybody other than a few minutes for Dante Cunningham or Salmons, depending on where you thought Salmons was playing. If Salmons was playing, I understand he was in the game tonight. But, I mean, I think the best you can do for Ajinsa on any given night is like 12 minutes, and that's not good enough to get anybody into rhythm. He's never going to have a real impact in a game in 12 minutes. So, yeah, it is a good problem to have, because if anybody goes down who's one of our three bigs, at least we know he'll be able to come in and, you know, give some difficulty to the other team. They can't just completely ignore him as a useless player, because he's got some offensive game. I'd still grade his defense is pretty abysmal, but, you know, he's got a bunch of moves and he can do some stuff offensively.
Yeah, and, I mean, it's hard to talk about this game without bringing up Eric Gordon. I mean, you could probably safely say, when you consider what they needed from him, the importance of this game, that this was Eric Gordon's best game in New Orleans. I mean, at times he looked like the elite shooting guard that the Pelicans were getting in the Chris Paul trade. And, this team has absolutely no shot without him on this night. And, you know, Chris Paul had that one little stretch where he single-handedly brought the Clippers back into this game. But outside of that, you know, Eric Gordon was the best player on the court for most, if not all, of the night.
Yeah, and you know what the craziest thing? I agree. I should say that. This was a fun game to watch Eric Gordon, which is making my friend really grumpy, because he has decided that he hates Eric Gordon above all other people. So he can't even, like, enjoy when Eric Gordon's playing well anymore. I think it's pretty funny. This game was, like, the epitome of making my friend really uncomfortable. He almost cracked a smile on one of those five three-pointers that he drilled. But Where's Blake Griffin? Like, I don't understand how Blake Griffin was pretty much a non-entity in this game. When you're told that you're going to be going up against Alexa Ajinsa, Ryan Anderson, and Dante Cunningham as the primary guys guarding you, if you're Blake Griffin, shouldn't you be just raring to destroy that?
And that's the weird thing is, I think Blake has dominated AD more than anybody else that AD has gone up against. And I'm not saying I think it was a good thing for Davis to miss this game, but Blake usually plays bully ball with him, gets him into foul trouble early, and yeah, I'm surprised that the Clippers didn't go to him more. They used him more as a facilitator in the high post. We talk about the basketball gods and, you know, Denver just hitting on us in crazy fashion. Clippers missed a lot of open threes, and Crawford and J.J. Redick were 1 of 11 from behind the arc.
Although I will say about J.J. Redick, he only missed one good three-pointer. All other of his four ones, he was like taking shots where he was jumping sideways, and he was always on the run a lot more. He wasn't able to stop as much as I'm used to seeing him take those shots. So, but you're right. I mean, Crawford should have drilled at least like another three of those.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing because I do believe that they should be a more physical interior. Like, do we remember one lob from the team that's supposedly called Lob City?
No, the only lob I can remember is the one that we broke up.
Yeah, I mean, so again, they have this, what I think is a very good power forward center combo, and they're just putting a bunch of shooters around Chris Paul and giving them all the green light. And when they're hitting, I mean, that's absolutely devastating. But, you know, overall, I, as a fan of the other team, I'm more afraid of what they have on the interior, and they didn't go to it nearly enough, which I'm happy with. And my last takeaway from this game is probably that I think this will be the last game, because he didn't play tonight, but this is the last game we'll ever see Nate Walters on in a Pelicans uniform. I think Monty gave him a fair enough shot. The second 10-day contract is ending. I think, you know, he's gone, and it's going to be really interesting to see if Dell goes and gets somebody else, or if this job is Jimmer's moving forward, because, you know, we still don't know what's happening with Holiday and when he's coming back, and whoever that guy is going to be getting a solid 12 to 18 minutes off the bench. And, you know, with again, this being the most important week of the last couple of years, that's a big role, and whoever's got the ball has got to play well in it.
So I've got to say, one thought I had based on how they were running some of their offense and how they were advancing the ball up the floor, would it shock you if Quincy Pondexter played some backup point guard for this team?
Oh, I think he'll be lobbying for it every single minute of every single day, but I don't want it to. I mean,
I'm not saying that it's a great idea. I'm just like, would it surprise you? I think he thinks of himself as a ball handler.
Oh, yeah, that's my biggest pet peeve with him so far. You know, and yeah, he could probably bring it up the court like Darius Miller did, you know, in that Clippers game last year when we were all out of point guards. Mm-hmm. But I definitely don't want to see. I mean, it's not like there's not point guards out there.
Right.
I mean, there are a couple of guys on the free agent market. There's multiple guys that could you could turn that second round pick into somebody. You know, I mean, second round picks got you Evan Turner last year. You could get a Mo Williams or a Ramon Sessions or something for that second round pick. And if you know Drew is coming back and he's going to be 100% after All-Star break, you know, maybe you don't need one because Eric, Tyreek, and Drew will play those 96 minutes, but I don't know how you could feel 100% confident about Drew moving forward. I mean, stress fractures are a really tricky thing. You know, he had a stress reaction, which is kind of a precursor to to another stress fracture. I don't know how this team could feel completely comfortable that, yeah, he's going to be fine for the final 30 games. No worries. I think, you know, Dell has to be on the phone right now and looking for a veteran guard, you know, in case of the worst case scenario.
Yeah, but I mean, why spend assets to get a guy who probably won't be here next year? Like, I don't see Eric Gordon going anywhere. Tyreke Evans isn't going anywhere. Jrue Holiday's not going anywhere. You're not going to have a ton of minutes to offer to anybody. So while you might be filling in an injury gap for the rest of the season, are you going to spend any sort of money to keep that guy around? Like, even if it's like only $2 or $3 million, are you going to spend that money to keep that guy around?
Ryan, you write a column every year about draft picks. What is the 57th or 58th draft pick have? Like a 1% chance of being anything decent, and you're telling me you wouldn't give up that for an increased 10 to 20% chance at the playoffs? I mean, come on. You know draft odds better than anybody else.
So if it's, you know, if it's in the 30s, it's okay.
No, they got the Memphis pick, which is going to be like 58.
I know. Yeah, you're right. I just don't want to see them go out and like try to get some veteran guard who's going to barely move the needle over Jimmer Fredette.
I mean, did you see some of those Jimmer turnovers in the first half? Did you see the other team attack him literally every possession he was on the court? I mean, you know, I don't know. I don't know how to measure the needle moving, especially if it's only a couple of minutes. But, you know, a couple of bad minutes could be the difference in the game. I mean, how many games are decided by a couple of points? And we always look at the end of the games, but those couple of points, those couple of minutes that change a game could happen anywhere in it. I just, you know, you said that you were terrified with the lineup that Monty sent out at the beginning of the fourth quarter tonight because a couple of baskets could swing it. I completely agree, and you can't, you know, you can't completely trust, I think, what they have. But again, hopefully Jrue comes back, and I mean, If Jrue plays at the level he was playing at the you know, before the injury, and Tyreke and Gordon play like this, like I was saying that OKC could go on some kind of crazy run. It could be the Pelicans that are doing that.
Right.
I mean, they look amazing.
So let's talk for a moment about that lineup, because I want people to realize how bad it was. And I'll give Monty this. He didn't trust it for, I think it only went for like a minute and 20 seconds before he's like, all right, that was a stupid idea. But the lineup was Jimmer Fredette, John Salmons, Quincy Pondexter, Ryan Anderson, and Omer Asik. Like, if you roll that lineup, Who is initiating the offense there? Like, there's no way you're bending an offense with those guys in any way that's going to start an advantage rolling for you. If you had this team, would you ever roll that lineup out there? Was he hoping that they had enough of a lead it didn't matter, you could get him a few minutes of rest? And I mean, is that the only, am I just being stupid that, you know, maybe a few minutes of rest is worth it, and if they can hold it?
I mean, as a coach, like, you have confidence in your guy. I mean, we're talking about Jimmer Fredette, but the more delusional thing is that Monty, I mean, he puts out John Salmons twice tonight.
John Salmons had an assist.
He puts him out in both. Oh, yeah, he got saved on that assist. I mean, it was, but... I mean, he saw Salmons in the first half and then, you know, decides to still go with him. So
maybe he's showcasing him.
Yeah. for a retirement home. Yeah. I mean, it's this is where I'm saying, though, is that, you know, just one more quality NBA guy in multiple areas would really help out. But I don't know. I mean, we could always, we look at a lineup like that and we could always say that Monty could stagger, but the more you stagger, the less your great players get to play together. And it's those lineups that could really, you know, swing a game in your direct. Like, yeah, you could stagger Gordon and Tyreek all game, but then that just means they're going to play together less. And, you know, when they play together, it looks pretty good with, you know, having both options on that side of the court. So it's kind of the steal from Peter to pay Paul type thing. And, you know, the ideal is that you have enough quality rotation guys to where they could hold on for those couple of minutes. And you know, which they did. I think Jimmer, he hit a couple of big shots tonight in between the turnovers and the poor on-ball defense. So, I mean, he survived tonight, but I think long-term they're going to need a little more than that.
Yeah. So I want to point out the one thing I observed over the last three games that seemed different to me.
Just by the way, breaking news, so you know when we're taping this in podcast, Jeff Green just beat Phoenix for us. Memphis 102, Phoenix 101. So yeah, basically that three-way trade.
Thank you, Boston.
Yeah, well, hey, that whole three-way trade, we get Quincy and Jeff Green goes and beats Phoenix for us. That three-way trade helped us out twice tonight.
So, you know, last podcast, you did say you didn't care about Phoenix and its record at all. So I'm seeing some changes here.
Well, no, it's not that I care about Phoenix. It's that I can't believe how bad Oklahoma City is. So, I mean, to me, it's like I got to kind of care about Phoenix because I'm starting not to care about Oklahoma City. I can't believe what's going on with them. And, you know, Durant banged up again. I'm hoping he rests for two more games.
Those are big games.
I'm only worrying about Phoenix by default because Oklahoma City is, you know, it's looking rough.
So, all right, let me talk about my little thing I saw. You tell me if you think this is just a function of the matchups that we had, or if you think that maybe Monty's changing his mind about how he uses him. One of the things that has annoyed me all season long about Ryan Anderson is the way he's used defensively. It's like Monty thinks of him as a perimeter player, so he must defend pick and rolls like he's a perimeter player. So he's the one big on our team who consistently early in the season was asked to jump pick and rolls. So when he was guarding the big man, he would try to jump out and cut off the point guard or the ball handler and send them back towards the guy who was guarding them. And what always ended up happening was that guy would dribble right around Ryan Anderson and then have a nice clear run right down the throat of the defense because Ryan Anderson wasn't going to keep up with that guy. And the Chicago principles are your big men stay back. They stay in the middle of the paint. And in some ways, I can understand why you may not want Ryan Anderson to be your guy staying back in the paint because he's not going to block any shots or contest anything really. But tonight and against the Clippers and against Denver, Ryan Anderson didn't jump a single pick and roll on any of those games and stayed faded back in the middle. And there was one play where he started to jump the pick and roll, got burned, and he fouled the guy. And he was like snapping and barking at himself. Like you could tell he was irritated with himself from that play. So do you think that maybe they've given up on Ryan Anderson as a hedge? Do you like that that this is the change? What do you think?
I'm wondering if tonight was mainly a result of Teague and Schroeder being the point guards. Like we saw Schroeder took one three-pointer today. And that, I mean, I think Ashik could come closer on a pull-up three.
It's possible.
That was just, I mean, it was almost as bad as his hair. So it might have, and Teague likes to drive as well. But yeah, I mean, I was about to hashtag Ryan Anderson rim protector tonight. He bothered some shots around the rim. So, yeah, it was. I'm hoping so. I'm hoping that maybe it's a scheme adjustment that'll be long term. But I'm wondering if it was only for tonight, just because of the specific point guards we were playing. I think, you know, I think it would make sense to carry over to Westbrook too, you know, and Dion Waiters for sure. So, you know, I think we'll see going forward, but it, you know, it's always makes sense. The only reason I think that the Pels were doing that, because, you know, if you drop Anderson back like that, if I'm a guard, I see that and drive right at him. You know, so I think it's a pick your poison thing. I think in any situation, if Ryan Anderson is near the ball and he's on defense, you know, you're in a little bit of trouble. I don't think there's an ideal solution for how you kind of remedy that. But yeah, it's something for people to definitely watch going forward.
Yeah. You know what I think is really funny is I actually, when I see Ryan Anderson and Jimmer Fredette in that pick and roll, defending a pick and roll, I have such a bad flashback of Vasquez Lopez trying to defend a pick and roll. And, you know, I don't get, like, Lopez went to Portland, and people acted like he was the missing piece. Like, Lopez was there to be an awesome rim protector, and he's a great defender, and blah, blah, blah. And he goes down, and you know how much their defense has slipped? It got better.
I mean, They got Kamen.
That's true. What was I thinking?
Yeah, they got the bow hunter himself.
Anyways, yeah. That's my flashback. Like, when Fredette and Anderson are stuck into a pick and roll defending it, you're nothing good is going to happen in the next 30 seconds.
I agree. Yeah, I mean, that's something to definitely watch for, but overall, this Atlanta game, all right, I'm going to give you a second to pull up the box score if you don't have it already, or you could just go off the top of your head.
Okay.
The most impressive thing in the box score to you is blank.
So I'm going to have to go off the top of my head. I would probably say it might be Ashik's rebounds, because I think he was at 18, wasn't it? Like, the number of rebounds this team controlled in the paint against them seemed to be, they seemed to be all over the glass.
Yeah, Ashik had 17 in 33 minutes.
Okay. And then probably Davis had somewhere around 11, right?
13, yeah.
13, wow. So 30 between the two
of
them.
Yeah, and Atlanta only had 32 rebounds total.
That's what I would have to go with. What is most impressive for you?
I mean, for me, again, I'm a boring guy. It's the lack of negative plays. Tyreke Evans having 12 assists, but zero turnovers.
Tyreke's on a run.
I mean, he's been on a run with the assists. This is his fourth game out of the last five, I believe, with 12 assists. He still, you know, turned the ball over at a heavy. I mean, we had no Tyreke out of control charges today. We had mm-hmm. no just, you know, and he had Damari Carroll, who was up in his jersey, you know, especially to start that second half. And Tyreke didn't force it, you know, he didn't just dribble with his head down, get that charge, throw the ball away. I mean, Tyreke, he made some nice passes these past couple of weeks, but he makes some of the lowest upside, like, biggest downside, but like, how many times have we seen that full court pass to Anthony Davis this year that even if Davis catches, he's going to be like going out of bounds or going to have no shot? I mean, you know, and he tries to rifle some through the lane through like four or five guys sometimes. I mean, but none of that, just, you know, played more like a quarterback, just told to manage the game. 12 assists, no turnovers, by far the most impressive thing to me in this game. And he had that banked in 3-pointer, which I'm sure he called.
Right. So last five games, you want to take a guess at Tyreke Evans' stat lines? Not stat lines, but his overall stat lines.
Well, I mean, like I said, I know he has 12 assists in four of the last five, so that's at least 48 assists. So I'm going to go with something like 17 points, 11 assists, and 5 rebounds.
He is putting up a 16-5-10 with a steal per game and 2 turnovers per game.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, this is why I don't want to call people crazy, but, like, I could see why some people are all aboard the, you know, of course, people will hide them now, but I'm sure we could find 100 Tyreek Evans trade threads and ideas from a month ago, but now everybody loves them. But, you know, it is something to be scared of, that you're going to mess with chemistry a little bit, but on the other end, you're very excited to get Drew Holiday back. And I mean, that's the other thing we got to talk about. You talked about in this Atlanta game how we held them to under 100 points on 100 possessions. This defense, you know, there was a short time where there was like 8 or 9 games that the stats were saying they were getting better, and I was saying, well, it might just be a fluke. Teams are shooting far worse from 3 against us. It's a bad part of the schedule, yada yada yada. It's starting to become a real thing where this Pelicans defense has moved into that middle of the NBA conversation, you know, since we rolled over the new year. And it's something that we have to consider and maybe even project moving forward, that this is now an average defense that's getting even better and better every night as they continue to play together.
Since the new year, they have improved 5 spots in the overall defense rankings. They were 27th, and now they're 22nd.
Yeah, and overall, I want to say they're like 13th in defensive rating, at least coming into tonight, since the new year. So,
yeah,
it's and that's all we ever said we wanted, at least for this year, was middle of the pack. And, you know, that's what they're playing like right now. And so, yeah, I mean, part of you says add Drew to that and it gets even better. Another part worries about, I mean, to me, I don't worry about Tyreek at all. I think whatever role he's in, his usage is going to be up. He's going to find a way to make an impact. To me, it's Gordon. I haven't seen Gordon play like this, as far as he just catches and shoots. He feels completely confident making plays. To me, it's, you know, it's Gordon that I worry a little bit about, or more about taking a step back. But if he could maintain.
You want to hear something crazy?
I want to hear it.
Tonight, he hit that 3 in transition, and he smiled.
Oh, God, I know exactly the play you're talking as
I was shocked.
Yeah, as it went to timeout, like, I think Quincy Pondexter or something came up to him, and he, like, smiled, and I didn't know what to do.
Right. It's like, what happened to Sourpuss Gordon? I mean, this is, wow.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's, it was absolutely unexpected. We had our human victory cigars, and Babbitt comes in for a minute, gets a swat.
Yeah.
I forgot. Nate Walters did play in the very
he
last.
Did play 1 minute.
Very so last second. So yeah.
There goes your theory out the window. Obviously, he's going to be sticking around.
Yeah. No, I mean, his 10-day contract's up. I think that's it for him. We can't sign him to another 10-day. So, but yeah, I mean, this was just a good all around feel good game. I can't wait to see the NBA tracking stats. Because I feel like Dante Cunningham in 22 minutes ran a Boston Marathon tonight. Like, he was tracking Korver. I mean, they run Korver off like 8 screens on a given possession. And Cunningham was tracking him all the way through. And got, I mean, so just watching this game, I know you don't watch all the Hawks games. Who do you think is a more deserving all-star between Jeff Teague and Kyle Korver? If you could only have one.
I am going to say Jeff Teague.
Why?
Because Jeff Teague actually breaks down and is very good at finishing around the rim.
He is good at finishing at the rim.
I'm just going to say it here. I think that the whole drive to get Kyle Korver on the All-Star team is just one of the, like, I hated it when they did it with the Pistons, because there's no way there was 4 guys on that team who were actually all-stars. There were some good players. And there's always this drive, this team's awesome, we got to reward them, reward them, reward them, and they look at it, and there's a couple guys that are meh, And they're like, well, those Mech guys are actually really awesome because they're team players. You take Kyle Korver and put him on any other team that is not fantastic, and he doesn't make that team good. Like, yeah. I'm 100% of the belief you take him and put him on a team like Sacramento, and Sacramento does not go on a roll.
Oh, wow. I couldn't disagree more. So, first of all, Jeff Teague, I have never seen a guard have that much space. When he drove into the lane, there was literally nobody within five. I mean, he basically plays one-on-one basketball because of all the spacing they have. And once he gets a half a step by his guy, there is nobody to help. That, I mean, he is a product of all the spacing on that team. And even tonight, he had open layups that he didn't finish. I truly believe if you put Tyreek in that same role, he's averaging 30 to 40 points a game. I'm not even exaggerating. I've never seen a guard drive into the lane and literally have nobody within shouting distance, but you have to respect their shooters. So I told you the night that we played Houston, I went to the Atlanta Utah game, and something happened in that game that I've never seen in my life before. Jeff Teague and Kyle Korver were on a two-on-one break. So there's one guy, and Korver pops out to the three-point line. Jeff Teague has the ball, and I'm not even lying. The one defender runs out to Korver and gives up the layup to Teague. And I'm watching it, and I'm like, that was a smart basketball play. I would rather give Teague a layup than Kyle Korver an open 3-point. I mean, you'd give up two over three, but I swear to God, I want to try to find that play. If anybody on the podcast is absolutely bored with their lives, I'm sure if you have synergy or whatever, it's a transition play. I have never seen anything like that in my life, but the guy consciously does it. Teague gets a layup. It's just unlike anything I've ever seen. I think Kyle Korver does so much for that. I would say if you took one guy off the team, the difference over 82 games, I think the Hawks would win 7 or 8 more games with Korver and without Teague than the opposite. I think Korver is such an invaluable piece to that team and one of the most unique players in the NBA.
Okay.
All right. So, yeah.
You're not swaying me on this one.
All right.
I've listened to Zach Lowe pounding that drum for, a couple weeks now.
Yeah.
I'm not buying.
All right. Well, I have no agenda. It's just what I see. But, other than that, in this game, I think we could gush over a lot of the stat lines. Again, we don't really talk about AD that much, but it's getting kind of ridiculous. That putback dunk, like I played a lot of Nerf basketball growing up, where you take like that little plastic backboard and put it on the back of your door.
Uh huh.
I couldn't have done that on my Nerf basketball hoop. Like, he makes the game look almost childish at times. The things that he does, it's sad that I'm not even like surprised by it anymore. If that would have been by anybody else in the NBA tonight, I'd have been like, oh my God, who's that guy? That's an amazing play. Anthony Davis, I've seen it so many times. I cannot wait for the end of the year Anthony Davis mixtape highlight video. It's going to be, I think people are going to believe that like 40% of it is CGI, because it's going to be absolutely unreal when you put all the plays from this year together.
So I guess I forgot to mention this Denver game before he got hurt. Anthony Davis had 10 different post-up opportunities in that game. I cannot remember. And I'm not saying he took 10 shots out of the post, but they actually ran 10 different plays where he posted up, they got him the ball, and he did something, whether he passed after being doubled, or he made a move and scored, or and he was effective. Like, this guy is turning into a monster.
I don't know what to say. I mean, and there's still more to go. It's still, I mean, I'd like to see him drive right more effectively. I'd love to see the post game, and then of course there's the, you know, the NBA just giving up, because eventually he's going to extend that shot to the 3-point line. So
I think you said, and maybe it's a year ago even, you thought that he would end up averaging 30 points a game at some point in his career. Do you still believe that? Do you think he's going to, I mean, the actual numbers of scorers in this league has declined. Like, it used to be there was always like 10 guys over 25 points a game, and over the last 5-6 years, it's been around 3. So do you think Davis is going to be like the next 30 point per game scorer for multiple years, or maybe just 1 year, or what are you thinking?
The only reason I say maybe not is, and I think a reason why this is happening in the NBA is, I think we all follow the Spurs, and I think minutes restrictions, you know, are is what we're seeing in the NBA. Somebody tweeted it out today that there's only like 6 or 8 guys in the NBA averaging over 36 minutes a game.
Yeah.
When, you know, the top players being around 39, 40, 41, Allen Iverson.
It's pretty yeah. Normal. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think those 4 to 6 minutes might prevent it. I mean, Duncan was a 40-minute guy early in his career. I don't know if Davis ever tops 38. And so I think for that reason, maybe not. Also, I'd have to know the roster construction. I don't think he gets to 30 if we have as many high usage guys as we have now. But could he? I mean, I think without any doubt, and in a very efficient way, I think the best part is that he's one of those guys who could, and he will not care. You know, I really believe that if you told AD today, you're going to average 8 points a game the rest of the year, and that's what it's going to take for the Pelicans to make the playoffs, like, he would do that gladly. So, you know, I don't think he will, just because of the minutes restrictions, but I don't think he'll care.
Yeah. Well, I mean, here's Anthony Davis is still the third leading scorer in the league, and he has the 37th usage rate, tied with Aaron Brooks.
Mm. That guy looks exactly like the alien from American Dad or whatever that show is. But all right, so we're talking about Anthony Davis. I'm going to ambush you real quick.
Okay.
So this game is called How Many Wins Will It Take? And basically, I have two things here, and you have to answer how many wins will it take for the following thing to happen. So let's first start with Anthony Davis because we're talking about him. How many wins will it take for Anthony Davis to win the MVP award this season?
I was actually thinking about this the other day. I think if he hits 50, he wins it.
Wow. So 24-10 in the last 34 games.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think he would not be denied in that situation.
So 50.
Which is shocking because, like, just think about that for a second. Chris Paul couldn't win the MVP, taking the New Orleans Hornets from a out-of-the-playoff team to the second seed in the Western Conference because of Kobe Bryant having a less-than-good season for him.
Mm.
And I'm pretty certain that Anthony Davis would win it if he could hit 50 wins.
All right, so 50's the magic number. Here's another one. How many wins will it take for the Pelicans to keep their pick this year? So again, when you look at the protections, basically the Pelicans have to make the playoffs and be one of the top 11 teams in the NBA. So if they get that 8th seed, they got to be better than all but 3 Eastern Conference teams. But so yeah, how many wins will it take for the Pelicans to keep their pick this year?
That probably means you have to win at least like 2/3 of your games, wouldn't it? Probably be like 53?
53, wow.
I think so. Yeah, I mean, right now, I mean, we'd have to be above, right now there's, we'd have to beat Golden State, Atlanta, or be below Golden State, Atlanta, Memphis, Houston, Toronto, Clippers, Portland, Dallas, Washington, San Antonio. So we'd have to be beating like Chicago and Cleveland to be to holding it. I don't know. That's doable, actually.
Yeah, I mean,
like Chicago's not scaring anybody,
right? You think Cleveland might surge? I think the final, the top three.
In, I think Washington's falling apart.
Right, the top three in the Eastern Conference will probably be Atlanta, Toronto, Cleveland, maybe, you know, I don't know, depending on what Chicago does, but yeah, I mean,
it might be 50 or 51.
Yeah, I mean, last year it would have taken...
Can you imagine winning 50 games, saving your draft picks, and winning the MVP? Anthony Davis would be God.
I mean, 24-10, which sounds crazy right now, but again...
Don't get carried away.
Yeah, I mean, again, they get through this three-game stretch, and they got, I mean... I don't think it's inconceivable for them to go 5-0 before the All. I mean, you look at the rest of this February schedule; it doesn't concern you that much. I know we're getting way too ahead of ourselves, and we're on a high right now because of the games that we won, and we could be on this pod tomorrow or you know next Sunday or whatever, talking about how they've lost three straight. So I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but. Yeah, I think that's right about it. I think 50 wins guarantees you a playoff spot, a real chance at AD for MVP, and keeping your draft pick. And if you keep it this year, you might keep it up until, you know, you owe Houston two second rounders in 2020. I mean, can you imagine the Ashik trade basically being, you know, Ashik for a 2020 second rounder? That would be that would be a nice little feather in Dell's cap. So, yeah, I mean, after this tough stretch, we got Utah, Indiana, and then a bunch of Eastern Conference teams, and then of course, the winning streak will end when we go to Denver. But yeah, I mean, the rest of February, that's why I'm saying this is the biggest week probably in Pelicans history.
Denver.
Yeah, I mean, you get through these three games at 2-1, or fingers crossed 3-0, and you could be talking about something really special. So,
all right, so let's wrap it up. Make your prediction. We're going to be probably doing our next podcast. Actually, we've been doing them Monday nights, so if we do it again next Monday, we will have also Utah. So let's do a prediction for those four games. Versus Oklahoma City, at Oklahoma City, versus Chicago, versus Utah. Michael, what you got?
I will stick with that the Pelicans are a truly devastating team to try to beat at home. I think they win the two home games, and they lose at Oklahoma City in a tight one.
Okay. I'm going to make them go 2-2.
Oh, wait. What other game are we talking about?
Utah.
Oh, okay. Well, then, yeah, 3-1.
Okay. So I think it's going to be 2-2. I think that they're going to lose one OKC game, and they're going to lose the Utah game.
What?
It's going to be a letdown, man. That's what this team does to us. Don't forget recent past.
Ugh. All right.
I'm not scared of Chicago anymore at all.
Yeah.
Chicago's nothing.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, those two OKC games... I can't even imagine the feeling if the Pelicans sweep those two games, they basically go up 5 on Oklahoma City because they'd be up 4 plus they'd have the tiebreaker. I mean, even one win, a split with OKC guarantees us the tiebreaker. So two huge games coming up.
Yep. So thanks everybody for listening to In the Know, and we'll be back next week.
Introducing Guinness Nitro Cold Brew Coffee Beer, blending the smooth, creamy nitro taste of Guinness with hints of coffee, chocolate, and caramel. Guinness Nitro Cold Brew Coffee Beer, your new favorite part of the day. Look for it where Guinness is sold. Must be 21 and over to purchase. Please enjoy responsibly. Diageo Beer Company, New York, New York.